everybody, and welcome back to the critically acclaimed streaming club, the only streaming club that you're listening to at the moment. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a critic. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold, and to elucidate a bit, the streaming club came about during the pandemic when everyone was locked inside, or is still locked inside, and we wanted to explore the options out there. There were a lot of streaming channels that were available to the public, and we wanted to rather than just review new films, also delve a bit. And we're going to keep on doing that because we like doing it. And our last poll was romances.
Yeah, we wanted to look at a variety of romance movies. Specifically, we picked films that were available on Netflix. There was actually quite a few decent options there. And I was a little surprised, but very pleasantly so, that the film that was selected was a film that Whitney had never seen before, but I had grown up with. Mm-hmm. It's a film called Mystic Pizza.
If you say that word one more time to me, I'm going to scream.
Married.
Bill and JoJo are made for each other.
JoJo, come on!
You can't force me to do something I'm not ready to do, Bill!
Daisy and Charlie are from two different worlds.
You're weird.
I'm weird.
You want a soda or some juice?
Tim and Kat are throwing caution to the wind.
I'll have some wine.
Is there a history of insanity in the family, or?
They say it skips a generation.
But in a town like Mystic,
I'm not gonna be slinging pizza for the rest of my life.
The best pizza!
The only thing for certain is that nothing is predictable.
I'm telling you, Joe, that I love you. I think that when people love each other, they should make a commitment.
If he really loved me, he'd wait. But I guess if I really loved him, I'd marry him.
Mystic Pizza is one of those movies that at the time feels like, you know, just a movie. It's nice. Everyone likes it. But then you look back 5 years later and you realize, oh my God, everyone was in this movie.
Well, everyone was in it, and my wife explained to me, this was one of those movies that in the late 1980s and early 90s was on very heavy rotation on cable TV.
Yeah.
So it was seen a lot by a great number of people, just not without even trying.
Yeah. So the film stars Julia Roberts, mm-hmm. who at this point was still very early in her career. I don't think she'd even done Steel Magnolias yet.
This was after Steel Magnolias.
It was after Steel Magnolias, but it was still early in her career. She was still like not like the lead. It's part of an ensemble. Lily Taylor, who would, of course, go on to a major career explosion in the 90s. Annabeth Gish, who never quite got as big as Julia Roberts or even Lily Taylor, but is still a mainstay, and she's done a lot of TV work in particular. We've also got Vincent D'Onofrio here, who I don't think has ever looked sexier than he does in this movie. And they all play waitresses at a pizza joint.
And not one, but two Eric Stoltzes.
Three, if you count Matt Damon. Yeah. By the way, this is Matt Damon's first movie. He plays a guy who is a preppy teen's younger brother. And at one point, he's eating a lobster and he asks if he's supposed to eat the green stuff. Mm. No, that's the poop. That's the joke. That's the whole joke. That was the start of Matt Damon's illustrious acting career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a baby.
Yeah.
No, the two Eric Stoltzes, one is Matt Damon, one is played by William R. Moses, and the other is played by an actor named Adam Stork. Neither of them are terribly familiar to me, but they're both working actors.
Adam Stork is probably best remembered as he was one of the main leads in that TV miniseries version of The Stand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who did he play in The Stand?
The
90s version or the new
one?
The 90s.
I haven't seen the new one. The 90s version, I think he played like the one guitar player dude who ends up with Lars Sanjacomo.
Oh, that guy. Okay,
I think that's him. I could be wrong. It's been a while.
I think the character's named Larry. I watched that a couple times, that 90s TV Stand.
And then William R. Moses was in Alien from L.A. With Kathy Ireland. The same year as Mystic Pizza.
What a hit. Okay.
Yeah.
Alien from L.A. is a spectacular piece of crap.
Yeah.
It was on Mystery Science Theater. And, of course, the late, great Conchata Ferrell plays the owner of the titular Mystic Pizza.
It had been a while since I'd seen her, a movie with her, and mm-hmm. I had, I'd forgotten how much. She only passed away in 2020.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I already miss her so much.
Yeah.
She's so damn wonderful.
First seeing her in Edward Scissorhands. Yeah. She's one of the neighbors in that movie.
Yeah. She was in L.A. Law. She was in Two and a Half Men, which I didn't really watch, so mm-hmm. I didn't get that experience with it. But yeah, she was a character actor. She was in Network. She was in Blansky's Beauties.
Yeah, she got around. She has
she's in everything.
Hugely wonderfully long career and always a delight. She plays the purveyor of Mystic Pizza, which is in a real town in Connecticut called Mystic Connecticut.
Yep.
Which didn't have a place called Mystic Pizza, but after this movie they did. They opened one to bank on the name. And working at Mystic Pizza are the three main characters, Annabeth Gish and Julia Roberts play sisters. Julia Roberts plays, her character's name is Daisy, and...
By the way, Mystic Pizza is a real place.
It is now.
No, the Amy Holden Jones visited the pizza parlor and wrote the screenplay based on the pizza parlor.
No, I looked it up. They said it didn't open until after the movie. No, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I got some bad information. All That's right. entirely possible.
Apparently,
I read it on the internet. It's not always reliable. so I apologize for spreading misinformation. If that's the case.
I'm going to see if I can look it up. If I can get a little clarification.
Yeah, you could totally be right, and I will eat my words. But yeah, they Kat and Daisy, played by Julia Roberts and Annabeth Gish, work as waitresses at Mystic Pizza. They also have a coworker and friend, Jojo, who is played by Lily Taylor. And they are all, and this movie is about essentially their relationships to sex and relationships. Daisy has a reputation as sort of like, sort of like the town floozy. She doesn't have a great reputation. People talk about her behind her back, and she's single and doesn't have a lot of aspirations in the world. She's just looking to sort of date and get along.
There's this wonderful bit where she's talking to her mother, and wow, that's really loud out there. That's wild. Something's going on.
Probably hear the motorcycles out
Big
there.
Big motorcycle. Anyway, but she's talking to her mother, and her mother is who works at a lobstering...
Like a fishery.
She catches lobster and stuff. And so their fridge is always full of lobster. And she's talking to Julia Roberts, and she just says, I don't expect you to be like your sister who's like going to Yale. I just worry about you. And there's this really sweet moment where Julia Roberts looks at her mom and says, yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I also worry about me. I don't have direction. I don't have drive.
And she compares herself, as everybody does, to her younger sister, Kat, who is... on the cusp of going to Yale, but needs a lot of money to go.
Yeah.
And I think she's already in somehow. It's kind of weird at the time.
She was accepted in February, which is to say you weren't fully accepted. You're accepted later on in the school year.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have a full ride scholarship or anything. So she has to pay her way. And Yale's fucking expensive.
And, a little bit of weird timing at the end of the movie is right before Thanksgiving. Mm. And she says, okay, now I'm going to go off to Yale. In November? What have you missed?
In February. Second season.
Okay.
She's going... They say at the beginning of the movie, she starts in February.
Okay.
So, she's getting ready soon. There's not much time.
But she's... this is the Annabeth Gish character. She is much more ambitious. She's working at Mystic Pizza to earn enough money, and she also works as a babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts the movie taking a kind of a long babysitting gig from... I think the Adam Stork character. No, it's the Tim Travers character. The William R. Moses character.
Yeah.
Whose wife is out of town and he needs help with his daughter when he needs to go to work.
Yeah, he's working on renovating one of the local houses. This movie takes place in Connecticut. Connecticut is, obviously it's in New England and there's a lot of old architecture there. It's a seaside community and all of the main characters except for, the two Eric Stoltzes. Are locals, and they depend on the tourism trade, and between tourist seasons, they're struggling to get by. It's a very working-class film. And he's been brought in to renovate one of the fancy old houses, and while he's there, his wife is in England, and we realize over time that while she's in England, their marriage is completely on the rocks. And Annabeth Gish completely falls in love with this dude because he also went to Yale and he's super studly. He's
tall and handsome and he looks just like Eric Stoltz. He looks just like Eric Stoltz.
Everyone looks like Eric Stoltz.
There's two guys that look... There was a scene where I mixed them up and for a second I thought Julia Roberts was also... they were both after the same guy.
Ah.
And I thought that was going to be the big drama. It's like he's dating Julia Roberts, but Annabeth Gish is also in love with him, but he's also married and... So, it turns out that Julia Roberts was dating a different guy.
Director Donald Petrie has a type, okay? And his type is Julia Roberts.
His type is Eric Stoltz.
Donald Petrie directed a lot of movies, mostly comedies. Miss Congeniality was obviously a huge hit. He did How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Grumpy Old Men, which was a big deal. Richie Rich, which a lot of people grew up with.
A lot of popular comedies in the 1990s.
A lot of very successful comedies, and that's his bag. The movie was written by a bunch of people, including Perry Howes, Randy Howes, Alfred Uhry, and Amy Holden Jones, who, well, she worked on the Slumber Party Massacre. She directed it. And that is one of the great feminist slasher movies. Mm. She also edited Corvette Summer.
No kidding.
So yeah, she's had a cool. Right. She also directed Made to Order with Ali Sheedy, so she's got a really cool career. Make sure you check her stuff out.
All right.
I saw
Made to Order in theaters.
Yeah. Also, there's Lily Taylor. Lily Taylor at the beginning of the movie is getting married to Vincent D'Onofrio, mm-hmm. and she gets total cold feet at the altar. She faints. She backs out of it, and she tells him, "I love you. I just don't want to get married. Can we please just not be married and have a lot of sex outside of wedlock?" Mm-hmm. And Vincent D'Onofrio is kind of okay with this because he loves her, but over the course of the movie, he's a conventional guy. He's a very conservative guy, and he's starting to feel really guilty about, like, he believes that love and commitment go hand in hand, and mm-hmm. he really wants to get married, and she really doesn't, and they really love each other, and that's the only sticking point of their relationship.
Well, It's very complicated, though, because she wants to have sex with him.
Yeah.
And he's really neurotic about it. He doesn't want to have sex because they have this, like, gigantic glowing Jesus statue in his parents' apartment where he lives.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to have sex with his parents around, which is understandable. Yeah, but also he feels guilty that Jesus is watching, and you know, he's, like, super Catholic. And then the next day, he, like, with all of his fishing buddies, calls her an nymphomaniac out in public.
Well, he had named named his boat after her.
Yeah, and he replaces it with a banner that says "nympho" as a slur. Like, he's trying to take the piss out of her, and she says no. And I don't want her to get back together with him at that point.
Yeah, he took that way too far.
He took it too far. He's the neurotic one, and she's actually trying to be a lot more healthy about sex and sexuality.
Yeah.
And he's the one who's sort of, like, dragging her back. I think I had hoped that the arc would be she leaves him at the end.
Ah, yeah.
And she doesn't. And that's a part that I didn't... The
arc ends up being... And listen, he clearly fucks up. She also steals his car, and then they vandalize another dude's car. No one in this movie is a saint.
No.
And that's one thing I like about this movie, is it actually doesn't deal in...
It's about messy people making bad decisions.
Yeah, it's a messy...
In a realistic sort of way.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things I like about this movie a lot, is that it feels really messy in a way that, like, people make mistakes that I believe.
Yeah.
And the arc of Lily Taylor and Vincent D'Onofrio is... her realizing that she doesn't want to be with anyone else, and him realizing that marriage shouldn't be about any sort of ownership, and that he needs to support her individuality, which is ultimately pretty healthy, but man, did he take that shit too far.
Yeah.
And I totally get it. That's a huge turnoff. Vincent D'Onofrio, again, as I said, he's very rarely been portrayed as, like, a hunk in a movie. It's like this and Adventures in Babysitting.
Romantic leads before.
Yeah, but it's not usually, like, hunky romantic leads. He doesn't get, like, the slow-mo shots of him walking down the hallway, you know? Yeah. Like, and this movie and Adventures in Babysitting are the only two I can think of where everyone's like, ooh.
Should have cast him as Thor. They really
should have. He would have been a good Thor.
He was Thor in
Well, he was a great kingpin. He played the kingpin in Daredevil.
He was
great as the kingpin. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He was amazing. I really like him here. It's interesting because I remember when this movie came out. I was 6 at the time, but I was following movies. My family loved movies, and
it's an R-rated film that came out the year I turned 10. This escaped my attention.
This is R-rated kind of shocks me. I think it just has a few too many F-bombs. Like, it's very easy to edit down for television. There's no nudity to speak of. Sexuality is all pretty muted.
They talk openly about sex in a way that in 1988 I think was pretty shocking. Keep in mind, this was right around the time of Sex, Lies, and Videotape, which came out the next year. And Sex, Lies, and Videotape caused a huge stir because it just talked about sex.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't, like, a lot of sex scenes in Sex, Lies, and Videotape, but people are talking very openly about...
Frank.
Yeah. And there's a scene where... somebody talks about masturbating on camera. It's like, and that was like this huge shocking moment.
It's so bizarre when you look at the arc of that kind of like conservative thinking about cinema, where we had gone from like the 1970s, where Deep Throat could be like a massive mainstream blockbuster, to the very conservative 1980s, at the end of which Julia Roberts talking about sleeping around a bit can seem...
A little bit, tee-hee.
What the hell happened within a generation?
Well, and the last decade has been really conservative, too. There haven't been a lot of very frank, open, sexual films for adults.
True.
In the mainstream, you know, you can always find these movies, of course.
Yeah, they're being made, but they're not. But the studios aren't like throwing money behind them.
Yeah. And I think there was, like in the late '90s, there was this huge long string of just terrible sex bombs. Mm. Like Basic Instinct was a huge hit. Yeah. Indecent Proposal was a huge hit.
Sliver did well, even though it's terrible.
Sliver did okay, but then you have stuff like Color of Night and Jade, and a bunch of other studio-backed sex thrillers that just did not do well.
The bottom fell out pretty fast. Showgirls killed it forever. It's not even a sex thriller, but basically Showgirls said that sex can't sell that much.
Yeah, and then other films came after, but that was kind of...
Yeah.
The big death knell of the sex thriller. So now we're in another conservative time. And can you imagine if there were a scene of in like a film for just a mid-budget film that's for adults that's not like seedy, a word like that. not seedy, but something that is actually just frank about sex and sexuality.
I feel like that's the purview of television right now.
Yeah.
You'll see that a lot on TV.
Euphoria is incredibly frank about sex.
But movies are way more middle of the road when it comes to stuff. But anyway, my point wasn't that. Mm. My point was, when this movie came out, it felt like Julia Roberts was the story. She was clearly on a career trajectory to greatness. Pretty Woman was only like a couple of years after this, and that by that point her star had solidified, and she was one of the biggest motion picture stars in the world. Steel Magnolias, Breakout, Mystic Pizza, Breakout. Everyone's looking at Julia Roberts, and I'm looking at this now. And first off, she's Julia Roberts. She's magnetic.
I got it wrong. Steel Magnolias shot at the same time, but came out after.
That's what I was thinking. Okay, so this is one of those films that made Julia Roberts increasingly a household name, and I think Steel Magnolias solidified it. So I wasn't crazy. I'm glad to hear that.
And she got a Golden Globe for Steel Magnolias. I remember that.
Nomination or just a win?
I think she won.
Yeah.
Let me look that up.
Yeah. But she went for an Oscar for it?
She got an Oscar for Erin Brockovich.
No, she won it. I mean, she was nominated for Pretty Woman.
And I think she won a Golden Globe for supporting actress in Steel Magnolias.
Mm-hmm. But she wasn't nominated for an Oscar for it.
She won a Golden Globe for Pretty Woman.
Right.
The
Academy Awards. You can do it.
Your
first Academy Award
nominee. She has a very long filmography, say.
And a very successful filmography, and good for her. She's incredibly talented.
Yeah, but she's incredibly talented. Yeah.
My point is this:
she's been nominated for 4 Academy Awards.
Okay, so that's Erin Brockovich, August Osage
County, Steel Magnolias, Pretty Woman.
Okay,
Erin Brockovich and August Osage County.
Steel Magnolias was the first. That's my point. My point was this: at the time, it seemed like the story was Julia Roberts, and briefly, it also seemed like maybe Annabeth Gish was like going to be like the next big thing, and that didn't quite happen. But she still had a good career. Watching it now. This is Lily Taylor's movie. Lily Taylor dominates this film, and she's great in this movie.
Every Lily Taylor movie is Lily Taylor's movie.
Yeah.
Because Lily Taylor is... She's like Parker Posey. She was one of those 90s indie film mainstays.
She was just in everything for a while.
She was in a lot of films during... Like, both of their careers were just huge in the 1990s, and are still going as well, both of them. And... But you knew it was a treat whenever they showed up. It's like, what is Clock Watchers? I don't know. Oh, Parker Posey. I'm going to go see Clock. Oh, and there's Toni Collette as well. And Lisa Kudrow ended up being the big star for a while.
Lily Taylor had great taste in movies. Have you ever seen...
A wonderful agent.
Have you seen The Addiction?
Oh, The Vampire... I haven't seen The Addiction.
The Addiction is one of the best vampire movies ever made. She plays a college student who gets bitten by a vampire, and it basically becomes like this big, long metaphor for like the existential crisis that all college students feel, and everything like she's like learning about philosophy and religion get amplified, and it all ends in this like really horrible like bloodbath of like the intellectual aristocracy. Oh, it's so good.
So good. But yeah, Julia Roberts' career was huge right away.
Yeah.
She was in a straight-to-video movie. She was in Justine Bateman film called Satisfaction, a sex comedy from the mid-80s, and then Mr. Pizza, Steel Magnolias, and Pretty Woman, and Flatliners all in a row.
Yeah.
And those were all huge hits.
Yeah, it was a pretty quick trajectory.
Excuse me, honestly. And then Sleeping with the Enemy,
yeah,
which was also a huge hit.
No, for the 90s, she was one of the biggest movie stars in the world, yeah, arguably and, the biggest.
I'm trying to figure out when I came in to her career, because Mystic Pizza, like I said, was an R-rated film. I didn't see Steel Magnolias when I was a kid because I wasn't interested in that kind of movie.
I saw both of those in theaters when they came out.
Yeah, even Flatliners. I still haven't seen the original Flatliners.
Oh, it's okay.
I saw the remake.
It's better than the remake.
Yeah. So I think the first time I ever saw Julia Roberts in a movie might have been Hook, where she played Tinkerbell.
Oof.
And
Oof.
Like Hook, and then the Pelican Brief. Like those, that was my introduction
Pelican
to
Brief's
her.
Okay.
And I feel like by the time I got to Hook, like she was already such a big star. It was stunt casting at that point.
Yeah, you already knew who she was. You've seen her on like the tabloids at the supermarket aisles.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Stuff
so like I knew
that.
Who she was. I'd seen her around, but I hadn't seen her in a movie yet. And so I feel like I caught up with her midstream. Almost to the point where she was such a big star, she was already being cast for being Julia Roberts.
Yeah, she was kind of coasting on like the fact that she's Julia Roberts.
Her movie star quality. And that's an invaluable quality when you're making a movie. I bring up Tom Cruise as like this movie star. He's a good actor, yes.
Mm.
It's rare that I'm blown away by a Tom Cruise performance, though.
Yeah.
I go to see Tom Cruise, not the parties playing.
Right, but then if you look at, for example, the early Julia Roberts movies, like Steel Magnolias, like Mr. Pizza, this is where you see her prove herself and become that.
I only recently saw Steel Magnolias, and now have only recently seen Mystic Pizza, and it's only now that I get to appreciate her as a great actress as well.
Yeah.
As a movie star.
She worked hard to become that personality that people liked so much.
I've seen her sleepwalk through stuff.
Well,
more than I've seen her actually give great performances. I think she gives a very, very good performance in Mystic Pizza.
She's wonderful.
She, Annabeth Gish, and Lily Taylor are all great. Of course, Conchita Farrell. The two dudes, who cares?
I kind of appreciate how unimportant they are.
Yeah.
Vincent D'Onofrio gets a little bit more because he's actually in a serious relationship. Like, they're already serious. And I think watching Lily Taylor navigate just how confused she is, because she's young.
Mm.
I think she's, like, the oldest. I think she's in, like, early 20s. She already has her own apartment. She doesn't. She's living with her sister, but like, she knows what she wants, but she doesn't know how she wants it.
Mm.
And she just doesn't, watching her explode over this level of relationship confusion is actually just absolutely captivating. Mm. Annabeth Gish and Julia Roberts, they play, they're sisters, and they're both like, you know, Annabeth Gish is the goody two-shoes, but now she's like thinking about having an affair with this much older man.
Mm.
I mean, he's not like spectacularly older, but he's at least 10, 15 years.
She's a teenager.
And he graduated from Yale 10 years ago, so he's like in his early 30s. So it's wildly inappropriate.
Oh, absolutely.
It's wild. It may not be illegal, but it's wildly inappropriate. Because I think they say she's over 18. But regardless, he's a creep. He's a super creep. He shouldn't.
If they were both single, they're both adults. They can talk about that amongst themselves. But he's married, and she's a college student, and she's also in his employ.
Yeah,
that's
it's
all
super
totally
wrong.
Inappropriate.
It's super duper wrong. And everyone acknowledges that. Like Julia Roberts sees right away that Annabeth Gish is like, she's been living a sort of conservative life, and she's never really had romantic interest, and she's clearly thinking about this in terms of like sort of a romance novel.
Mm-hmm.
And Julia Roberts is just like, this is wrong and creepy, and you should not be doing this. And she
comes back with, why are you telling me what to do?
You sleep around with everybody.
People,
Julia Roberts, meanwhile, is having a relationship with the other Eric Stoltz, the younger Eric Stoltz, who is the preppy guy with like four names. And he's like, his family owns a giant house that they only vacation in. He's been kicked out of law school for cheating, which, you should be kicked out of law school for cheating. I don't want you to be a lawyer. I don't have a lot of sympathy for that.
Which he does confess to her. It's like they've had a date, and he's like, you know what, I should probably come clean.
Yeah. And to their credit, and people look at Julia Roberts and say, you're also making the same mistake. Here's a rich guy who's using you.
Mm.
We are working class local people. They're also of Portuguese descent, which the upper class in Mystic look down on.
Yeah.
And when we do see them actually have conversations, it's
Connecticut blue blood types. Yeah. They're like racist of everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, that's not great.
What's the joke in Monty Python where they have a game show called Prejudice and they're trying to, like.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I think it's like, I'm going abroad. Like, there's people are writing it. I'm going abroad and I can't think of anything wrong with Belgians. And like so the host says, well, let's make something up. Here's why you can hate Belgians.
That's
and,
so
and here's
awful.
Some slurs you can use.
No,
against Belgians.
That's awful. Anyway,
I mean, it's a comedy show.
I know. I'm just saying. But my point is, his whole family is assholes, and everyone assumes that he is using her for the summer. Hmm. She should not get too invested in this. He's going to go away, and this will all become an ugly memory, and you'll feel bad for being used, or worse. You know, you'll end up pregnant or something, and it's going to end up affecting your whole life. And
you're making all these bad decisions regarding this guy.
And she
doesn't really care about.
But he seems so nice, and she starts dating him.
And they because of that confession, he's not honest in his study.
Yeah.
But that he confesses to her, he shows some emotional vulnerability.
Yeah, he
says, "I'm not a clean, perfect guy. In fact, I did something really bad." Yeah. Here's the complete me. Like, he's actually very open about it.
So it's easy to see why she would be into him, and it seems like he's actually pretty good. There's a whole bit where, like, he's going away for the weekend to visit his grandmother, and oh, isn't he so nice? And that's the night when they all get drunk and steal Vincent D'Onofrio's car for the whole boat incident. And they decide to drive the car up to the country club and steal some beers. And that's when she notices that he's there. He's supposed to be home for the weekend, visiting his grandmother. But instead, he's there, and he's got another girl around his arm. So she takes all of, the chum from the giant buckets in Vincent D'Onofrio's truck and dumps it into, his convertible Porsche.
She's got a really nice Porsche.
And he's like, what are you doing? And she's, all mad and stuff. And he's like, this is my sister? And she's like, oh, this is awkward. But you were supposed to be with your grandmother's. She had a migraine. I went home and called you. You were out with your sister.
Well, shit. We couldn't make this in 2021 because we have cell phones.
Yeah, that whole plot point would be dead. There'd be no excuse to not know. It wouldn't make any sense. But at the time, if you're not home to get your phone to call, you don't get your phone calls, and so you really can't complain.
But this goes to what you were saying about how this is about people who make organic mistakes. Yeah. This isn't about evil people. This is about people who are trying and they're making bad decisions with rational ends.
Like Lily Taylor steals, and she gives it back to him. She doesn't destroy it or anything like that. But she steals his car to get back at him because he hurt her feelings. And she's asserting her dignity. Julia Roberts demolishes his Porsche, which, by the way, what if he was an asshole? He would have sued you for that. He would have been paying off a Porsche for the rest of your life. But she's
working at Mystic Pizza.
But she's asserting her dignity.
Yeah.
And you have to respect that. And that all comes to a head with this one really just awful dinner sequence. It's the one with Matt Damon is there. And the parents are being assholes, and they're condescending, and they're condescending to their son, they're condescending to Julia Roberts, it turns out Julia Roberts, knows the help, because they're the same working class. It's like, oh, hey, how you doing? It's like, and the dad's just like, don't talk to the guests. So it's all awkward, and then the Eric Stoltz Jr. makes this, big scene, and Julia Roberts leaves, and she's mad at him, and she should be mad at him, because, listen, your parents are assholes. But they're not pretending to be something they're not. They're just assholes. You used me as a stunt to show how superior you were to them for dating me. You're the piece of shit here.
She figures it out pretty fast.
Yeah, it takes a few dates, whatever, to figure it out. But when she does, I'm done. Fuck you. Mm. I'm out. And I love that.
Meanwhile, Annabeth Gish is falling deeper and deeper in love with this married man who's charming and good looking and tall and, falling, kind of bonding with the young daughter who's maybe six.
She's four.
Oh, she's four. Okay.
She says she's six, but that's something she does. She always lies about her age. I'm nine. You're four.
Okay. She's 4 years old and they're sort of growing in a family way. She works at a pizza restaurant, so wouldn't you know, why don't I take you for a tour of the house I'm working on, bring some of that Mystic Pizza, and one thing leads to another in a very unwise sort of way, and when they drive back to the married man's home, who should be there but his wife, who's come home early.
Yeah.
So they were nearly caught.
And he, Well, not only was he like cop, but like as soon as they get home, he just immediately snaps back into husband mode right in front of her, pretends she doesn't exist. They've never had any connection.
Yeah.
And that's when Annabeth Gist realizes I was nothing to him.
Yeah. I was a summer fling.
I was a summer fling that he will forget about. Yeah. And that's it. And it kills her. And Lily Taylor, who was babysitting for the babysitter.
Yeah, like, covering for her so they she can have this date.
And doing a great job, too. It's like, as soon as they walk in the door, hey, you're home. Did you get that medicine for your sick mother? Yes. Great.
Yeah.
Like, covering like a champion right here.
You're a good wing woman.
I love the car ride back, because Annabeth Gish is just, like, in shock over everything that just happened and how much the rug has been pulled out from under her in multiple directions. And Lily Taylor's also freaking out, because she's like, no, she wouldn't try to get revenge. She didn't know. His arm was around you for a fraction of a second. That could have been anything. I said your mother was sick. You're probably fine. And Annabeth Gish is not even there. She's just so heartbroken.
Yeah.
It's so genuine. It's so great.
The married guy tries to make it up to her by paying for her school.
Huge check. We don't see the number of zeros on it, but it's a lot.
It's a lot. And, you know, she takes it. This is while she's at work, and she's kind of distracted and messing up, and she tears up the check, and she goes back out, and who should be there but the Dr. Deus Ex Machina. The critic, Mr. Plot Contrivance.
We've seen people like watching TV a couple of times in this movie. One time they're watching Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and they're talking about Mar-a-Lago. Trump already owned the place.
Yeah, I looked it up when he bought it in 85, just a few years earlier.
Yeah, that one was weird. That is aged in a way that no one could have predicted. But in any case, the one thing they were watching was there's a TV food critic who goes to all of like the local places in New England and is apparently merciless in a way that only food critics seem to get away with anymore. Because nowadays, if you're a merciless film critic,
people come get at you for being mean.
Yeah, because you're kind of being an asshole. And like, to be fair, kind of sometimes. But food critics have been assholes since the dawn of time.
Although,
and they are just merciless.
I didn't read the review because I haven't watched the movie yet, but Justin Chang, I think, called the new Space Jam movie like a tornado of garbage. Like,
that doesn't surprise me.
People are laying into that one, at least. Wow. So
I haven't seen that one yet. We will do it for this week.
Again,
I will watch it.
I'm not hopeful, but I would love to be surprised.
Wouldn't it be great if it was wonderful? And I will be the first person to come out and say it. Guys, we're being too hard on Space Jam. I would love that.
I think this is an affable film. Let's watch it.
Wouldn't that be great?
The Three Stooges syndrome all over again. Yeah, I'd love for that to happen.
Sometimes it's better than you think. So that's why you try not to plan these things out in advance. You don't decide what you think about a movie. You wait and see what the movie does. Bada bing. But in any case, here's a food critic who's notoriously tough on local establishments.
And
when everything is hitting ahead, he's in the restaurant. And they decide to give him Mystic Pizza.
Mystic Pizza.
Mystic Pizza is not just a nice restaurant. Oh, by the way, I looked it up. Mystic Pizza did exist. It wasn't where the movie said it was.
Okay.
And after the movie, they renovated it so it would look like the movie.
Ah, okay.
So it's not yes and no.
I was mostly wrong, but somewhat right.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is that it's actually a Portuguese restaurant, and they have a very old family recipe for the sauce, and nobody knows what's in the sauce.
It better be good, because those pizzas look awful.
Hold on.
It looks like they ordered them out of a box and just sort of put them out on the like, they're not hot. They don't.
No, they're definitely not. I've interviewed a couple of people who worked on this movie.
Okay.
I've interviewed Lily Taylor.
Okay.
I've interviewed Vincent D'Onofrio. I've never interviewed Julia Roberts. I've never interviewed Annabeth Gish. And of course, I never interviewed, sadly.
I can no longer interview Conchita Ferro.
I wish I had. She would have been the perfect person to ask. But every single time I've interviewed someone who worked on Mystic Pizza, I asked them if they knew what the secret ingredient is. Because it's the last line of the movie, is them wondering what the secret ingredient of Mystic Pizza is, because no one knows. And I asked, and Vincent D'Onofrio didn't know. Lily Taylor didn't know, and if memory serves, Lily Taylor said, "I think we ordered Domino's." And we just because it doesn't matter. It just needed to be on screen. Pizza. Like, it doesn't, whatever. We'll tell you it tastes good. So they just ordered pizza from wherever.
The problem is the quality of the pizza is a plot point in this movie.
Yeah, so you want it to look amazing.
There should at least be a few, like, food porn shots of just how nice the pizza looks.
I feel like that's the biggest missed opportunity with this movie. I think the thing that's keeping this movie from being, like, a cult favorite, like a beloved film for people who grew up with it, to being something we visit over again. It's not a food movie.
No, you think it's a food movie. It should be a little bit more food.
Like, you think it'd be a food movie. You want those glamour shots of the pizza.
The three main characters are all great, and I love how complex they are. I think they all give really good performances.
Yeah.
And in that regard, it's good. It's quite a good movie. But the pizza itself is sort of the thing they gather around, and it's called Mystic Pizza.
And it's a plot point.
It's
not just incidental. It actually is woven into the fabric.
I would like Mystic Pizza, the actual eatery itself, to have more personality. It looks like just a place in a mall where you'd grab something.
And again, that's kind of the issue is that this takes place in the tourism off season, so you're not seeing it filled with people.
Well, it doesn't need to be filled with people. The place itself needs to have more personality.
That's the point. It's sleepy right now. They're barely getting by. Okay. There's only a couple people there, and as a result, it's just very chill, and they're just sort of laid back.
They have like a soda fountain and a Galaga machine. It's like, I'd go there, but you know, it doesn't seem like the kind of place where the pizza is the focus.
But that's the thing, though, is that if you're lucky enough to live in a place where you do have, like, one, like, oh my god, nobody knows how amazing this one place is kind of restaurant, often they are unassuming. And that's one of the reasons why they're a well-kept secret.
I suppose.
Like, there's a place on Sawtell, which isn't too far from where we live, that I have walked and or driven past probably literally 1,000 times since I've lived in Los Angeles proper. And we only just went in there for the first time like a couple months ago. It's called Nina's. Nina's is the best Mexican food in town. And that's saying a lot in LA. Like, Nina's is amazing. Like, I love it. And but it's unassuming. It's not actually it's not on a strip somewhere. It's not like it's not even a lot of foot traffic. But that's the thing, is that you look at the restaurants that are not part of a big chain, that aren't protected by money, and they're not going anywhere. Because turnaround for restaurants is crazy wherever you go.
Here in Los Angeles especially, but just about anywhere.
What's that place that's next to Tito's Tacos?
Oh, that pastrami joint.
No, it's not the pastrami joint. There's a Mexican restaurant next to Tito's Tacos.
It's Mexican and also says pastrami.
No, that's Johnny's. Johnny's is the pastrami place.
Not Johnny's. The one next to it. The one next to Tito's.
They also sell pastrami there?
I believe so. It's a Mexican restaurant, but they also have pastrami sandwiches.
Okay, but there's this famous taco joint I guess it's more of Mar Vista, Culver City.
No, West LA on the border of Culver.
Yeah. It's a famous taco joint called Tito's Tacos. And you can get like a lot of
tacos.
They serve tacos. No one would buy those.
I think that you can get burritos. I think they serve enchiladas, but I'm not sure. It's the tacos you go for.
Yeah.
It's fast. It's greasy. It's super cheap. And there's always a line around the block.
Yeah. It's ideal for stoners, people who are getting out of clubs. They had a great commercial jingle. If you ever wanted, the only thing better than a Tito's taco is two. Yeah. Like, it's great. And Tito's Tacos is a perfectly nice taco place. The most amazing thing about Tito's is that Tito's is a local, like, kind of a legend. People go to Tito's. People hear of Tito's. They're visiting, like, I've heard of Tito's. Let's go to Tito's, right? Tito's is and has been next door to another Mexican restaurant for as long as anyone can remember. It's called Cinco de Mayo's Tacos.
That's it.
I just looked it up. Cinco de Mayo Tacos, which is right next to Johnny's Pastrami, has been right next door to one of the most famous Mexican restaurants in LA for as long as anyone can remember. And it's still there. And that tells you a lot about Cinco de Mayo Tacos. That tells you that the people who have been to both go to Cinco de Mayo.
But I like to think that Cinco de Mayo has understood that Tito's is so popular that there's enough overflow that they can be right there to catch everybody
else. I've been to Cinco de Mayo. It's way better.
Is it?
It is a very, very good Mexican restaurant. You should totally go. Wonderful, like, wide variety on the menu. Everything tastes amazing. And yeah, it's just it's successful because it's better than the one next door that's more famous. That's the same like genre of food. You can't sustain that otherwise. You can't be like the local burger joint, like next to like In-N-Out for decades if you're not a good burger joint. You just don't do it.
That's the premise of Jonathan Gold's career, the late great Pulitzer Prize winning Jonathan Gold. I think to date still the only food critic to ever win a Pulitzer Prize. You can find his story. There's actually documentary films about Jonathan Gold, but he's an LA local and decided to, when he had this sort of big gap in his life, when he had nothing better going on, to just start eating at all the restaurants on Pico Boulevard. And just going down systematically.
And we live just off Pico Boulevard. Pico Boulevard was one of the longest streets in LA, by the way, so that doesn't narrow it down. But
way inland, and he decided just to start working his way down Pico, trying all the food, and that's how he became a food critic, because he just realized that all of these little holes in the wall had some of the best food ever made, whereas, you know, some of the more prestigious or better known or more expensive restaurants weren't as good as sort of the local stuff. And he was very adventurous. I was going to try this. What do you serve? We serve one thing. What is it? Well, fine, I'll have it, whatever it is. And he gets like tripe soup.
He's
that's
the lungfish horchata.
I'm going to try your lungfish horchata. Oh, damn. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
You hit on something here.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as lungfish horchata.
I really hope not. That sounds awful. Hey, who knows? Maybe it's the most amazing thing ever. But I digress.
I'm thinking about Jonathan Gold. I got to look up his review he wrote of the strawberry donut.
That's what's kind of missing from Mystic Pizza. Feels like it's ingrained into the premise.
You needed a food critic who talks like an actual critic and not, you know, off the rack movie snob number 8.
Yeah.
Some guy with a handlebar mustache and a suit.
Well, that's why I brought up, besides the Mar-a-Lago thing, that's why I brought up the whole Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous thing, which is a show that would commonly appear in movies to establish a theme of the haves and have-nots. And that's something that's very much in play. Bless you. Something very much in play in Mystic Pizza. And I feel like his level of food snobbery is playing into that idea of classism rather than actually anything to do with actual food.
Yeah.
Food writing, food criticism, food preparation. I don't know. I just feel like Mystic Pizza, you should not reboot or remake this movie.
It might be a good TV show, though. They turned it into a Broadway show.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
A musical based on Mystic Pizza.
I think Mystic Pizza would be a great TV show.
Oh, just like staying at Mystic Pizza.
Yeah, just take these characters and their versions of these characters, let them, you know, live their dramatic lives, and then you could actually focus more on what it's like to own a small restaurant business with like a lot of legacy. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's interesting enough to hold a show. Because that's the thing that I think people have connected with Mystic Pizza over the years. Mystic Pizza is a very good movie. It's wonderfully well written, it's wonderfully well performed, but it's not very showy. It doesn't have a lot of huge dramatic moments that like people will remember and quote. It's not like so well photographed you have to go, wow. Mm-hmm. It's just a very well-made drama. And I feel like what has made the film last has been, it's just the absolute connection that we feel to these characters, because they are portrayed in such a realistic and, you use the best word, messy manner.
Yeah.
In a way that so many sanitized Hollywood dramas do not.
Yeah.
Something that's very good, but you compare this to something like A Beautiful Mind, which it just feels very, it feels mawkish and stagey. Like, that's a vibe. Like, Ron Howard doesn't do this anymore. Like, Parenthood, he briefly had it, and then he lost it.
Parenthood is really messy, and then he just went a little too slick.
I miss the messy drama, and I feel like Mystic Pizza is one of the great, especially unsung, messy dramas. Mm. There was a time when, as you said, this was a reasonably successful film in theaters, but because it was on TV a lot, it built up this big cultural cachet, like something like Christmas Story would, for example, where it did okay and then it became popular later on when people could see it all the time. Nowadays, people aren't doing that anymore. They're not watching things randomly on TV, and a film like Mystic Pizza is, I think, losing some of that clout that it had developed. Mm. And that's a shame, because this is a really, really sweet movie, and people should see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found that Jonathan Gold review.
Oh, great.
If you just to quote a little excerpt,
yeah, just
this was published in the LA Weekly in 2007, but
back when that was a good newspaper.
Yeah, but yeah, back before it was bought out by conservative weed bros.
Yeah, it's a terrible. I wouldn't line a hamster cage with it right now. It's awful.
The fruit, this is about a strawberry donut from Donut Man. The fruit is moistened with a translucent gel that lubricates even the occasional white-shouldered berry with a mantle of slippery sweetness oozing from the sides, turning the bottom of the pasteboard box into a sugary miasma in the unlikely event that the donuts actually make it home.
Damn, that's good.
Yeah, it's just that's such, really such good a
writing.
Good writer.
That's really good writing, damn it.
Yeah.
Oh, we should start a food podcast. It's just us chewing. Like, good. You can really taste the donut.
In the springtime, a man's fancy turns to thoughts of donuts, raised glazed by the dozen, to Bismarck's bursting with raspberry jams.
Jonathan Gold, I could read that whole thing.
It's
dedicate a whole podcast just to reading Jonathan Gold reviews. not even commenting on them, just reading them. But anyway, brilliant. But anyway, Mystic Pizza, currently available on Netflix, pretty easy to find in general.
It's on Paramount Plus as well. It's out there.
Yeah, it's a lovely film. Please go see it. We think you're going to enjoy it. Next time on the Critically Acclaimed Streaming Club, we're heading on over to Peacock. Peacock is a streaming service.
So it's Universal's, it's the NBC Universal streaming library. And you would think, what with the gigantic library of films that Universal owns, that there would be a huge selection, but they're more like HBO in that regard.
No, not HBO Max even.
No, HBO in the golden era.
Yeah, they just
four or five blockbusters you were really itching to see and shovels of crap.
Yeah, it's actually weird. When Peacock debuted, they actually had a very respectable catalog library. Yeah, like, you would go on there and they would have
all the Hitchcock stuff and all the Universal Monster
stuff. Yeah, they had almost
stuff,
every Hitchcock movie that the Universal had almost every one of the old monster movies Universal had, like Frankenstein, The Wolfman, etc. And then at some point, they just took that away. And I don't know why. And I understand that there are rights issues, and sometimes that certain streaming services or other whatever have the rights
deals with certain
movies. Yeah, and they're for the future or whatever, and these things are still getting cleared up. But it makes no sense. It has left that streaming service feeling pretty anemic. So normally what we do is when we pick a streaming service, we try to pick a category. We tried to pick a category, and every category that we came up with just didn't have enough to fill out a list. Because again, how we populate our lists, and you can vote on our Patreon page, patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork, is Whitney chooses two films that he has never seen or barely remembers seeing because it came out so long ago, that he needs to, we need to fill out our education.
Yeah.
And I pick two as well. And then we let our patrons vote, and that's that. We couldn't find a category where we could each find two movies. It was pretty brutal.
There was actually a lot on there that I haven't seen, but they're really determined to fill out their catalog with like kids' Christmas films and like bad animated films and a lot of
Sci-Fi Channel mockbusters
kind of stuff. The kind of stuff that exists to be filler on a video shelf somewhere.
Well, in any case, here's what we came up with. These are films that don't really have a theme, although they almost do, I guess. First off, we have Bridesmaids, the Paul Feig ensemble comedy, Oscar-nominated modern classic. A lot of people would agree. Starring Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph, Melissa McCarthy, Rose Byrne, a lot of other cool people as well. It's about Bridesmaids. You've probably seen it. Next up, we've got Flashdance, starring Jennifer Beals as a steel town worker on a Saturday night.
And she's a maniac.
I actually haven't seen that one. She's also a sexy dancer, a professional sexy dancer.
She wants to change her career to that to that of dancer.
Yeah. Also, hey, speaking of Julia Roberts, one of us, and I won't tell you who, has never seen Pretty Woman. So
I hear it's about a pretty woman.
Yeah. So that's something we might do.
Richard Gere plays the pretty woman.
And you probably heard of it. And then lastly, just to throw in a wrinkle.
Okay. Can you choose Bridesmaids? Make us watch Bridesmaids. Uh-huh. Make us watch Pretty Woman. make us watch Flashdance. All well-regarded movies.
Yeah. Or you could choose...
Or you could be a jerk.
And choose Christmas Twister. This is a low-budget disaster movie in which a whole bunch of, like, really powerful tornadoes hit Texas on Christmas. And it stars Casper Van Dien.
I was going to ask if it stars Casper Van Dien.
Casper Van Dien and Richard Berge. Knew it was coming.
What? No. Costas Mandalore.
Oh, but Costas Mandalore was still doing Saw movies, I think.
Or Lacey Chabert.
Lacey Chabert does the Christmas movies. I don't think she does the serious films anymore.
Or Alicia Witt.
Yeah. But it is an option, damn it. It's directed by Peter Sullivan. Let's take a quick look at the career of Peter Sullivan.
Peter Sullivan, who has, like, I'm sure, 8 other names under which they direct.
Peter Sullivan has directed films like, let's see what we got here.
Christmas Twister.
The Dog Who Saved Halloween.
Oh, well, thank goodness.
All About Christmas Eve. Dear Secret Santa.
All About Christmas Eve.
Ooh, Christmas Under Wraps. I know that one. That one's good, actually. It might actually be better than we think.
I'm surprised nobody's done All About Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Like that, anyway.
The Flight Before Christmas. Broadcasting Christmas, Wrapped Up in Christmas, Kukui, the Boogeyman.
At Christmas.
Yeah. The Secret Lives of Cheerleaders, The Road Home for Christmas, Fatal Affair.
The Secret Lives of Cheerleaders, Fatal Affair, we're dipping into some pretty raunchy territory here.
I think he's starting moving more of a Lifetime. anyway, I have a lot of respect for people who make their career being very prolific and working within this milieu. I don't mean to jest about that. But sometimes the movies are very, very silly, and sometimes by design. Maybe Christmas Twister is one of them. We will only find out if you vote for it.
Or you can make us watch a good or well-regarded classic movie instead.
Yeah, or you can make us watch Bridesmaids, Pretty Woman, or Flashdance. We will watch whichever one you vote for. In order to vote, you have to be a patron. Head on over to patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. Even $1 a month gives you the opportunity to vote for this show and in all our other polls. And you also get our Holy Batman podcast, where every week Whitney and I review another 2 or 3 part episode from the classic 1960s live action Batman series with a star-studied special cast. And there's other stuff there in Patreon as well. We've got podcasts dedicated to Star Trek. We've got commentary tracks. We've got podcasts dedicated to the Academy Awards. We have online hangouts. There's a lot there. So thank you, everybody who is a patron, for contributing, for voting for these polls. Thank you, everybody who takes the time, takes the money. We know it's a lot to ask. If you can't afford to be a patron, we totally get it, and we're just grateful. Thank you for subscribing. That really helps. If you have a moment, if you could leave us a review, star rating, couple of sentences really, really helps us find our way into the algorithms and where people can find our show, and that really helps the show grow and expand and gives them an opportunity to make more shows for you.
Yeah.
That's that. You can always email us if you want to talk about anything we discussed in this episode or anywhere else. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Once again, that is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. We're also on Twitter @criticacclaim. I am @WilliamBibiani.
I am @Whitney Seibold.
Tell us about our P.O. Box.
We have a P.O. Box. You can mail us physical letters, and we'd love to get some from you. It is P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064. You can address it to either of our names or to the Critically Acclaimed Network.
Very special shout-out to everybody who's already sent us things. It's very, very kind of you. Of course, no one is obligated, but it's very, very nice that people have taken advantage of it because we're doing it because people asked. I guess that's that. So we will see you next time on the Critically Acclaimed Streaming Club. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I don't know how to end this podcast.
Thanks for joining the club. Something about a club. It's a club.